construction, right?
Nothing, brother.
Hey.
Congratulations.
Welcome.
You're free again.
Present. And I believe Supervisor Molina is here too, so. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
Okay.
We're going to start with you, Mr. Murthy.
Yes, sir.
Well, let me say up front, congratulations on a job well done to you and the team.
Thank you, sir.
Everyone here has worked long and hard for the last number of months, and no one can say they didn't know anything about it. And I think it paid off. And so to you and the team, congratulations to everyone here at the MTA Metro.
Thank you very much. Starting off with just some few photographs of the 405, just to quickly go through it. This is some of the big equipment and arrangements we had to do to take the bridge safely. And these are just quickly some photographs of how things went through. And the bottom photograph is the one when we opened the freeway. So I think thanks to everybody and City of LA, County, our media relations, community relations people, everybody helped us to work. They helped us to leave us alone so we can do our work. So we thank them. So.
Well, you know, the comparison that I got from folks was that very similar to the 1984 Olympics, when we put the word out about changing our driving patterns for a few weeks. Yeah. This was for a weekend, and it all came together the right way, and you were able to, you know, it's always better to, you know, under-promise and over-deliver, and that's exactly what happened.
Thank you. Moving along to the what's going on with the 405, we have a couple of significant issues. One of them is we finally have an agreement with Getty and Caltrans and Metro. Thanks to Mike Miles and his team, they helped us to get this agreement through. And I think now this will help us to preserve the project schedule as we have been working hard to do it. And there are some costs involved. We will get back to the board later on with that. We are also close to an agreement with VA. I just signed it this morning, and it's with Caltrans to finalize and get it over to the VA. We do still have some issues with the Salvation Army. They are requiring some mitigation measures, which our legal has advised that we don't have to, so we are working on that. The last item on there is the utility relocation. It is still on a critical path. We are working with the city to get that resolved. Otherwise, the project is moving ahead as planned and as scheduled. Metro Orange, DWP has... Yes, sir.
Let's go back on that 405 issue, too. Mike wasn't here, just stepped in from Caltrans and to Caltrans and your team as well. Congratulations on a great job there.
Thank you very much. It was a great partnership that we had with everybody out there. No one person can claim credit for the success.
I think it was a great team effort, multiple agencies working together. I think people are so excited, they think they want to do it again in about 11 months.
Actually, Mr. Chair, while we're on that, we've had our first planning meeting about next year, and thinking what we can do to take advantage of some of the events that were occurring last weekend. Mike had a really good idea. You may have heard about the bicyclist who were arrested. But the thought is, why don't we play with this a little bit next year and maybe have a marathon on the freeway or bike races, or let's do something to make it fun, a pain in the neck. I should note that when the freeway was opened on Sunday, there was an L.A. civic moment of celebration as the cars began to drive on the freeway. It was passing the location where we were all at. There were some guys there with hard hats, so the motorists could tell we were officials. So they were all honking and waving and giving the victory sign and stuff like this.
It was a victory sign. It wasn't like you're number one. They didn't. They gave you got more than one finger,
yes,
right?
Sir.
Yeah, good. Okay. All right. All right. Okay.
Moving on to the Orange Line, we are on schedule on that project, and these are some of the ongoing construction photographs that you have there. We don't have any major issues resolved regarding that. The congestion reduction demonstration project, we had a groundbreaking on July 6th, and the contractor has started some construction work on the power drops, on the freeway message signs, and he's also on schedule regard to his design. So there are no noticeable issues to report on that. On the Crenshaw LAX transit corridor project, we are working with the FTA to release the final environmental document. It is coming to the board in September, and we are expecting record of decision in October of this year. Project costs, we just completed a value engineering on that project. We have several good suggestions that came from the team, so we are trying to implement them without sacrificing the intent or the criteria and standards that we have. We also have a resolution with FAA regarding the trench along the aviation, so they have signed off on a hybrid version, which is a partial coverage of the trench. We are also going ahead and talking to the industry regarding a mid-August procurement documents, so we can get some input from the industry before we finalize the RFQ-RFP process. Preliminary engineering is proceeding according to schedule. We also have some good negotiations going on with BNSF. The term sheet that we have submitted for abandonment, and our legal people are helping us to finalize that. That seems to be going along fairly well. The next is the regional connector. We have the preliminary engineering in progress submittal done on June 29th. It's currently under review by Metro and all the other agencies. PE is about 41% complete. We have essentially completing the geotechnical work according to the schedule. We had some recent meetings with the FTA regarding the roadmap to follow. The further refinement of the schedule is under the works. And our real estate is working with our building broker. The board approved us to go ahead with the integrated projects office at 777 South Figueroa. The lease requires that the option extended each year up to 2015. And we have to exercise that option by no later than September 30th, so we are going to do that. But we will plan to come back to the board requesting approval for a fixed-term, long-term lease. By doing so, we will be not only getting a good rate for the rent, but we'll also be getting all the furniture that are currently in the building. So it is a good deal, we think. We will come back to you later on with more details as soon as the real estate people finish their negotiation. Moving on to the West Side Subway, the administrative draft of the final EIS EAR was submitted to FTA on June 27th. Preliminary engineering is progressing pretty well. We are at about approximately 55% of the mark. We had meetings yesterday and day before with the FTA on the roadmap as to what the future dates are going to be for various submittals, reviews, and approvals. And the same information regarding the leasing of the building applies as we talked about Regional Connector. Both Regional Connector and West Side are located in the same building. Next is exposition, right? All right, so Brian, you're going to do that, or?
Yeah. Thank you. Phase one, our contractor still continues to struggle in meeting schedule dates. As I've reported before, we had a settlement agreement with the contractor that called for him to be substantially complete by June 15th. As part of that, it actually provided a 30 days of float if the contractor used his best efforts to make that.
Excuse me, can I just interrupt?
Sure.
Do you feel that the contractor's struggles is based on the settlement agreement?
No, I do not. I think the contractor's struggles...
Historically, is based, I mean, we always run into this at the end. Contractors struggling to keep pace.
It's struggling to keep pace. You know, once you start to go into testing, a lot of things come out, certainly from the electronic side of things that you have to troubleshoot. This contractor has basically historically had problems with planning and resourcing the job accordingly, and I think we still see him struggling with that. We have notified them in the past that we intend on assessing liquidated damages on July 17th, and we have now notified them that we are going to start assessing liquidated damages. They are now forecasting their schedule August 15th for substantial completion. Our independent evaluation of their last progress schedule, we're looking at probably sometime in September of this year. We're still working hard with the contractor and Metro to try to complete the testing elements so we can get in and still begin our pre-revenue operations. We're looking at mid-August. He's having some real problems with the signaling system at the gated crossings and at the Long Beach Blue Line Junction. They're troubleshooting that stuff this week, so if they can get those elements evaluated and fixed, then, you know, we will hope to make a mid-August substantial completion, or at least go into pre-revenue operations to try to support the November-December budgeted ROD date. So we're working very hard with Metro, the contractor, the City of L.A. to hold this budgeted ROD date for the project. There's also the remaining elements of work on the project. Again, the initial ROD is to go to La Cienega Station with a follow-on ROD in basically the spring of 2012, and that's to get the Farmdale Station and the Culver City work elements completed. On the project budget, we're still at this point in time forecasting a $13 million overrun along with any contractor claims or other unknowns. We are now in the process of processing eValue engineering reductions, so we hope to get those resolved here in the next 30 to 60 days, which we think will reduce the cost by $7.8 to $9 million. We continue to work with the third parties on some of the reimbursable costs for the project, so we continue to negotiate with them. And then we're also still looking at other potential cost savings of $1 to $5 million to close this budget gap. Moving to phase two.
Not optimistic that we're going to start pre-revenue operations in August, mid-August. It's correct, we're working on this, but right now we're having more difficulties than we should be having at this phase.
Mr. Thorpe, I'm going to ask a couple questions before we move on to phase two. You mentioned that the contractor is struggling to keep up to date or keep on pace with the project timelines. What would you attribute that to? Is there more than one item, or is there one area that's causing the contractor to slip?
I think right now the main thing is his testing program and he was slow getting all of the testing procedures in and getting those approved. He was slow getting that staffed up so they had the resources available to do the testing program. And then on top of all of that, if everything had gone perfect, he probably would have made it, but things have not gone perfect. So as they've unveiled issues on the project, it's further delayed him.
Now, from our side, that's causing him to be slow in the testing or any other parts of what he needs to do?
Not in accordance with our assessment, no. I mean, these are all things he's responsible for designing and putting together and, you know, is solely responsible to make sure that they work.
What impact will this have on the budget for the project?
At this point in time, as we say, we're going to begin assessing liquidated damages, so that would actually create a revenue stream to the project. So at this point in time, we're not anticipating any additional costs from the forecast that we have at this point in time because of the delays. Again, the delays are on him, so it's going to be his responsibility to deal with those costs.
I have lots of questions. Are you finished? Okay, well, I have questions before you go back to the West Side Subway, but that's different. In phase one that is going through, what was the actual budget?
The original budget?
Okay.
The first, the budget was approved, it was, I believe, somewhere about $600, $650 million.
And the contingency allocated to that was?
About $90
million. Okay, and so the budget is now?
$930 million, I believe.
And the contingency?
Well, at this point in time, there's really no contingency because we're forecasting a an overrun, so. Well,
you already have an overrun.
Right.
But I'm trying to understand where is the, because you have so many outstanding issues already, right?
Correct.
And they haven't put a dollar sign on some of those outstanding liabilities, correct?
Some, yes.
Huh?
Yes, some.
Some?
Yeah.
I've not received them. Do you have them? Have you shared them with us, the committee?
I have not personally, no, but I certainly
Somebody
be willing
shared
to.
Them with the committee? I'm not talking about the lawsuit portion of it.
As far as additional risks out there? I think there are potential.
Phase one.
Yeah, I mean, there are potential contractor claims that change orders that they submitted that we have not merited that they could come back and claim and go to DRB on. That would have to be accounted for.
The thing is that on this one with regard to phase one, it's like we're, you know, and I know we're already in phase two, it's just we're not getting any closure here as a committee. We just keep getting, you know, we put in the doorway, we're putting in the doorknobs, you know, and we just keep moving forward. And then I go into closed session 3 months later and said, oh, you know, the contractor never agreed to this. Could we get a better briefing than then there's, I don't have a whole picture of phase one. And so it doesn't, every time we get these, it's just, you know, monotonous. You do 12 projects at one time. And I just know that this one is, it has a lot of issues, but I don't understand where I'm going with it.
Okay. Would you, I mean, be happy to come and do an individual briefing or anything
well,
you'd like
I mean,
to do?
I mean, answer some of the basic questions of who, what, where, how, why, and when. When I've asked them in closed session under this thing, it's always in the process of negotiating. So right now, what phase are you in on phase one? You're in the final phase,
We're
right?
in the final phases, yes.
Which is testing.
Which is testing.
All right. So right now, in all of the components of testing, this is with how the trains and so on are going to be running. But there's a lot of outstanding issues, and they haven't been resolved, correct?
There are some, yes.
Huh?
There are some outstanding issues, yes. And most of those are related to either change orders that have the contractor has not submitted or change orders the contractor has submitted that we have basically said there's no merit to them.
Time frame for change orders? I mean, if you're going along and you find a bump in the road and he submits a change order for it, doesn't he have to get approval before he changes whatever he's going to do?
It depends. I mean, most of the times when we say there's no merit to a change order, it's because it's our belief that that's within his existing baseline scope.
Does he take it upon himself to change it without approval?
Generally, no.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So how can you have change orders after the fact?
After the fact as far as authorization goes? I don't understand the question.
You said there's outstanding change orders. What does that mean?
Well, there could be outstanding change orders. I mean, he still hasn't finished the work. Well, he still hasn't finished the work, so there still could be things that are out there that he comes upon. He's still got some intersection work to do on some of the city streets, so he could find things that weren't identified on the plans.
No, but you said there are some that doesn't. I'm sorry. Didn't he say there was some change orders that don't merit consideration?
Yeah. Well, when we don't merit them, it's because it's our belief that all that work is within their contract, their original contract, and so they don't have any extra money coming to them. And sometimes they will agree with that, and sometimes they will not agree with that.
Isn't it well defined as to what is a change order and what is not a change order?
Yes, in my view, yes.
Then what is it legally that we're not doing correctly in this regard? I mean, why should there be a dispute?
I mean, a contractor per the contract can dispute.
No, I know anybody can dispute anything. I understand that. But I'm hearing bits and pieces of it that it seems like we just keep moving along. And the thing is, because I wanted to ask some questions with regard to these issues, with regard to the West Side Subway. But as we're looking at Expo Phase 1, it's very similar to the Red Line with change orders and things of that sort. The thing is that we've never gotten a complete and thorough package as to what's outstanding. All we know is this potentially could cost us an additional $100 million?
I would hope it's not that much. I'd have to go back and see, but I'd be happy to provide that to you. Well, as like I say, we're forecasting $13 million, and there could be maybe another $20 million of outstanding non-merited change orders.
Okay. So as we go into Phase 2, this is a separate and independent budget, yes or no?
It is. Yes, it is.
Different and independent contractor?
Yes.
Okay. So, and this is all operating under the Expo Board as well?
Yes.
All right. So, on Phase 2, what is the budget for it?
About $1.5 billion.
All right. And what, within that, the allocated contingencies you have are the ones that are noted here?
Yes.
All right. So, out of the $1.5 billion, $119 million is for contingency for construction, and then you have a project reserve of $66
million. Yes.
Now, considering the problems that you had on Phase 1, that doesn't make enough sense to me.
Well, I think one of the – well, we got some differences here on Phase 2. On Phase 1, there was still – when I talked about the original $90 million of construction contingency, the project still hadn't been bid. It was a different contracting methodology where construction packages were negotiated as the design was complete. So, you know, it evolved over time, which left us susceptible to escalation. For Phase 2, we have a lump sum fixed price for our contractor for the construction work, which covers 90% of the work on the project. So things like escalation are really not our risk. We've been able to move that risk over to the contractor.
But if you look at your risk below, okay, when you say a lump sum project, I've heard that as well, you have something called scope growth there.
Correct.
What is that?
It's generally requests by third party for changes that need to be managed. Somebody assumes that you're going to build, you know, 20 feet of storm drain pipe, and when you go back to the agencies, they say they want 40 feet of storm drain pipe, and so you need to...
Who would that person be?
It could be the city, the county. I mean, it could be a number of different entities.
So you don't... In the preliminary engineering that was done years ago, none of these things are sorted out.
Well, we try to the extent we can. Again, the engineering is...
So you open the hole up, sometimes you can't.
I understand opening a hole, but changing it from 20 feet to 40 feet is a change, right? So the city is mandating that it be a 40-foot change, then it's, you know, you should know somewhat. What I'm trying to understand is as we go into the West Side Subway, all of the things that we supposedly learned on building the Red Line, of which probably none of those people are here anymore except us, We don't seem to be implementing, whether it be in change orders or monitoring. Now we had all of these issues with the Expo light rail, lots of issues, as you know. And I think things that are, I mean, I don't know if we've finally closed the Red Line. Have we closed? Well, we have lawsuits pending, I guess, on the Red Line. And I think it opened up how many years ago?
1993.
Okay. So... And in this one as well, and so what I'm concerned about is that I'm not so sure when, in fact, something closes financially. And I'm not getting enough information in your... You just keep telling me, oh, now we're putting in the doorknobs and we're putting in, you know, the doorbell. And now, so I never get to the point of understanding, you know, did the guy engineer the door wrong? So that later on a guy comes in, well, the door doesn't fit into the frame. And so now I got to buy a new door. And so, and then I'm going, well, what about the engineer that was supposed to give you the right size for the door? I mean, I don't know that I should be reconciling these things, but I never get to see this. And so couldn't we get something that's a little bit other than, I mean, scope growth is open-ended. It should have parameters of what scope growth. I mean, I see scope growth as I'm there on the corner and I say, you know what, I want the doorway of the subway opening to face this way. I would like more sunlight panels on this thing. Can people do that?
They could. I mean, traditionally it's not the public. I mean, traditionally it's the agency we work with that asks for different things on the project. Some of the stakeholders that we work with on the projects.
Like who?
I mean, it could be Metro, it could be the city, it could be the county, all the different entities that look for different things on the project.
There should be parameters, okay? I could understand that you open up a hole and all of a sudden, oh my God, we got to change all of these utility wires or these. I could understand that. But that's not a scope growth issue. It could be that all of a sudden the county or the city changes their laws and now they want a whole different set of parameters as to how you mitigate whatever that issue is. But I think there should be defining aspects as to what these things are. I don't know what unbid construction packages are, but I would take it that whoever is responsible for an unbid construction project package shouldn't be allowed to happen. There shouldn't be a risk. I mean, how could that happen?
Well, we have basically the maintenance facility that's being bid as a separate package, so we want to get that to final design before we do a bid package on that, and then we are now in the process of bidding.
Can, but why would that be a risk?
Well, we have a budget assigned to that construction package, and if the bids came in above that budget, then, you know, we'd have to deal with that issue by either tapping into contingency or rescoping the facility.
The thing is that I just think that what happens here, unlike any other project, what happens at MTA, and I see it continuously, and we've seen it on some of our county projects as well when we don't put lids on them, is that this is a never-ending process. I mean, the developers know it as well. All the construction folks know it as well. It's just an unending tab of dollars that they come back to. So it's just a matter of how you argue it. And I just think that Don, I don't know how we could do it. You and I have been sitting on this committee now for well over 10 years.
Well, it's called the change order committee.
Right. But the point is that I don't see it capping, like stopping and saying, wait a minute, you know, we can't put in 30 more feet for this storm drain because it's going to cost us $4 million. And if the city's insisting on doing it, then we've got to negotiate something with the city.
Agree.
I don't see that ever happening. All I ever see, you know, it's like I'm waiting for my universal bridge redesign. You know, I'm on year, 14 of that one? And every time he gets close, he yanks it back. And it's never, I mean, I know I got 2.5 more years here, so you're going to have to wait me out that long, okay, on the universal bridge. But the point is that we need to have some continuity here. We've got to be learning some lessons along the way, and I just don't see us doing it. A lot of similarities from the Red Line on to Expo, and then now I'm seeing we're going into phase two. But the worst part is now we're going into the West Side Subway, and I'm getting, you know, the same thing. You know, we're going to put in the door. The engineer's going to do a preliminary design on the door, then we're going to put on the door, and then the doorknobs. When am I going to get a complete package and time frame of cost of how we're going to bid this thing out? Right now, preparation of the RFP package for procuring final design services has begun. What kind of an RFP are we putting together? Okay, what kind of a final design are we putting together? Why did you choose to go this way as compared to design build? I mean, what you're making these decisions, and I appreciate them, and I take it they're informed decisions, but this committee doesn't know what they are. And if you shared it with us, I must not have been here when you told me what that was. And I see you going on to, it says, a roadmap schedule for entry into the final design is being finalized. But, you know, I'm glad you're finalizing it with the FTA, but how about us over here?
We will be coming to the board with the schedule as soon as we come to an agreement with FTA.
But I haven't even seen a full budget.
The budget is going to be provided at the time of the adoption of the project. That's when we bring the budget
but
schedule.
But we've already adopted the project. If you're already spending and doing all of these other kinds of things, isn't it possible? I mean, I know that the EIR is in the process. It's just that we have to approach this one a little differently. This isn't like we just begun to build a subway. We've done it once before. There were lessons learned. We are doing light rail with had disastrous implications from something that was going to be a pretty freestanding construction package, as we were told, or along the way, that's blown up and to become something very different that we'll probably be litigating for a while. So I'm just concerned that when we go into the West Side Subway, I wish this committee could get more descriptive and content-oriented briefings that have assurances instead of risk. Because later on, you know, on year 12, when you say, but I didn't know you were changing that portal on that. Oh, yeah, we put it in one of our reports. Well, it's always done within this drum of a lot of things. We're telling you about 22 different things, and it's just slipped in there. So I don't think we have that. I know we never had it for Expo 1, and I've been on this committee, ever. A complete package of how we were moving into it. We have not had yet it completely on Phase 2 that I know of. I can go back and pull out all of these things and their little things. There's never been a complete and thorough report as to how we're going to move forward on that. I'm still trying to understand my relationship and responsibility as to what the Expo Board does and how I have to rubber stamp it, and I'm still concerned about that part of it. But I'm very concerned about people going in there and changing what, if they want to change it, they got to come up with the money for it. And if there are changes that all of a sudden state law changes and these environmental things have to be changed, then we should know. But it just keeps moving along, and then you get, oh, we need $300 million more. It comes out of something. So anyway, I'm just very concerned about how all of a sudden the West Side Subway is getting lumped into these reports and being part of the normal, you know, white noise that's going on and not a... It's a very, very, going to be a challenging project in many respects. And I'm very concerned as to how we're not dealing on this committee with some of the challenges that are there. We don't have a full budget. We don't understand its financing. We don't know exactly the full realignment. I understand the EIR is in the process of being done. There's a lot of political discussion out there every moment. You know, somebody will pull me aside about what they want to do over by Beverly Hills High School and, you know, things of that sort, but we really don't know. And we're on this board. So it really would be worthwhile. And I don't know that you have to do it at a board meeting, but there should be something more thorough other than these, what do they call these things that they put up on?
PowerPoint.
PowerPoints.
Well, I would just add, I mean, I mentioned the reason, that's why I interrupted you earlier when you used the magic words that the contractor was struggling to stay on schedule. Those are the magic words towards the end of a project that make the project very, very expensive. That's when we are in a corner. And I think that's what Gloria was trying to address. And, you know, we get to a point where we all want the ROD and we all want a finished project. But, you know, it just seems like, you know, sort of sneaks up on us and all of a sudden we don't have a choice. And I think, you know, where this is going, I mean, this continues to be the same old story with the contractor. And this is not the first time we've done this battle. And hopefully...
Agreed.
In the contractual situation with council, that we are starting to tighten these things down a little bit so that we have the wiggle room. And I understand, what is it? It's over 50% of the change orders are usually owner-generated, right? I mean, you know, us being Metro.
It could be. I don't know the exact percentage, but, yeah, it is a combination of owner-driven changes as well as, you know, just – unidentified things, differing site conditions, those things you just find.
I mean, Expo, we ran into PUC and, you know, that whole debacle. And
correct. PUC delays.
Yeah. So, okay. Mr. Leahy, do you have a...
We'll plan on coming back in October with a more detailed plan on the red line as far as we have it in October. Murthy, right?
Yep. I would prefer during the time of the life of the project budget adoption, at that time they make a presentation of all the details. That'll be October, yeah.
Okay, fine. And we will, at every major threshold on these projects, because of the constraints on Measure R, we'll be talking about what we think is a potential overrun. We will be compelled by board policy to identify how to reduce the overrun, eliminate it before we start that phase.
Absolutely.
Well, I suppose a perfect example. When you look at the overrun there, okay, and granted, some was PUC generated and others, that is the sucking sound of Measure R that concerned us all as it related to the subway versus all these other projects, why we included highways and, you know, all the other things. If you put that piece and that kind of percentage overrun on the West Side subway piece, you know, you're going to get to Western Avenue about a half a block beyond or something like that, because you're going to run into real problems up here from all of us that were a part of that decision. It's going to come out of somewhere, and there's a whole bunch of other things that we promised the people that supported Measure R that we have a responsibility to deliver. So
we understand and agree.
Okay.
And are committed to not having that happen.
Okay.
Foothill.
Okay. Next, we go to the foothill. Chris.
Thank you very much. Good morning. We've begun construction on the I-210 bridge. We've completed our clearing and grubbing of the construction site. We've established access to the median, and we have begun a retaining wall required to support the westbound 210 travel lanes so we can construct the foundations for that bridge. We've received the final proposals from the alignment contract proposers. We're wrapping up that evaluation. Our board will award that contract next Wednesday morning at its board meeting. We are working on obtaining 4 permits associated with the San Gabriel River Bridge replacement. We also are required to obtain a NEPA environmental clearance of that, which was accomplished yesterday. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers signed the finding of no significant impact for that, so that's been completed. We anticipate receiving 3 of the 4 permits by September. The 4th permit will be completed during the final design of the project. There is a CEQA challenge of our SEIR that added the maintenance facility among a few other project refinements. We are in the process of working through that. We've worked with Metro's County Council to establish a strategy in dealing with that. We have a hearing scheduled for October 26th to get a decision from the judge on how that will work out. This is a slide that shows the project budget. We have $44 million in contingency on a $735 million budget for our extension from Pasadena to Azusa. However, we also have surplus funding for a future extension from Azusa to Claremont. So if you combine those two sources of funding, we have a total of $119 million, or 16% of the total budget, for contingency. Metro recommends in their policy a range of 10 to 15% at this point in time of a project we're heading into construction. Our project is, you know, all of these projects are challenging. They have challenges, but relative to the other projects within Measure R, ours is one of the less challenging, and so I would think ours recommended number would be closer to 10%. So we feel very comfortable with the amount of contingency that we have on the project. Obviously, we do not want to spend the $75 million of the surplus funding. We would like to use that for the future extension, but we do have that in the event that it's necessary to use.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
On this one, is the authority, what is it called, the Gold Line Authority?
Yes.
They're doing this project?
That's correct.
So these are their figures?
Yes.
Do you validate their figures?
Yes, I actually am a Construction Authority employee. We've continuously...
Not an MTA.
Not an MTA employee, no.
All right. So if, in fact, you go over $735 million, where do you go from there?
We would follow the Metro policy for control of the projects. We would... our first course of action would probably be to use some of that $75 million that we have allocated for our second phase of the project. And if that is inadequate, we would look at the other options, de-scoping the project, possibly shortening the project. There are, there's a policy that we would follow.
What if you find out toward the end, like they're doing exhibition, you find out toward the end?
Well, we have the next slide shows the various different processes that we would use. We have a cost and schedule procedure. We would constantly monitor that. We believe that it would be unlikely that something at the end would come up that $75 million would not cover. But if that were to happen, we would do whatever we could to de-scope the project and make it work within the existing funds.
The reason I'm asking the question is, if you go over budget, I mean, what's to say you don't come here and just ask for more money?
It is possible that at some point in time that could happen. We don't feel that will happen. We feel we have 16% contingency. We have $119 million. In contingency. We've done a lot of detailed planning. The project is not as complicated as the Expo project. We do not believe that will happen.
Why is that? Because it was already a dedicated rail? Is that?
Yes, it's already a dedicated rail. The right-of-way is existing.
Which, of course, was not an Expo.
A portion of Expo was. We do not have any street running sections. They have, quite a few street running sections where they have to, deal with a lot of city public works. Our project is largely contained within the existing Metro right-of-way.
It's just that having watched the authority carry forward on the initial gold line, I just thought it was so very well done. And, of course, it proved at the end to be, other than a couple little bits in there. But so I think there's something to be learned here, Art, along the way, and I just think that we should keep a closer eye, because with Expo it was, tough luck, you can go to the board, get another $300 million. Now we're at $900 million. Oh, well, tough luck, we might have another $86 million in contingencies that we need. So I'm just saying, I don't see this project doing it that way.
Well, you are exactly correct.
I know I'm exactly correct.
We changed... We changed the MOU on Expo 2 and this Foothill project from what there had been before. We now have detailed agreements as to how we work together. We've been providing much more detailed oversight and reporting than we used to. And the whole point of that is to identify early on potential problems so that we can take corrective actions to avoid the outcome of which you're expressing concerns. So we're all true believers in it. And that's why we're going to be tracking this very carefully.
Well, I just hope that we're going to continue to get these side-by-sides as we proceed forward, because it'll be interesting to see how Phase 2 moves in comparison. What is the total cost right now of Phase 2?
Our budget
of Expo Phase 2.
I don't know that.
$1.5 billion?
$1.5 billion, yes.
Okay. And right now your total is $735 million?
That's correct.
That's inclusive of contingencies, correct?
That's correct. There is an additional $75 million that we have set aside for an extension, but yes.
But that's not really a contingency.
We would use it if we have to.
Right.
Obviously, our Pasadena to Azusa segment is priority, and if we have to sacrifice those funds, we will. We do not want to do that, but we certainly will.
Thank you.
And in addition, we are using essentially our phase one blueprint for phase two.
You should.
Yes, and we are making a few changes. We've increased our coordination with Metro staff to ensure that they're right along with us as we move through the project. I'll go through briefly some of our contingency management techniques that we have. I think the most important is project planning. We're doing the best job we can of developing the engineering to appropriate level to identify those items that may become an extension of a water line or whatever. We've worked very hard to try to avoid that. We coordinate with stakeholders constantly. We meet with Metro on a biweekly basis. We meet with SCRA, Union Pacific, BNSF, all of the cities, the utilities. Constantly work with them to understand their needs and try to develop a scope that addresses that. We've obtained agreements with all of our project stakeholders, with the exception of Caltrans, and that's in final signature in Sacramento, so that should be done very soon. We're working on obtaining certain permits ahead of time. Crossing approvals, we have 35 of our 37 crossings approved to avoid that. We conducted a peer review back in June, which was very helpful in providing feedback in so that we can improve the scope. We also have a risk management plan that we implement. We have a cost and schedule control procedure. We monitor it very closely. And we also have Metro's unified cost management process. And in fact, we actually implemented that earlier this year where we identified a few shortfalls in those budget areas that I showed you earlier, and we had to reduce that the surplus funds that we had for our future extension. We had to reduce that to cover those shortfalls. That concludes the presentation, unless you have any questions.
Okay. Any other questions?
All right.
Thank you. Let me go back to this question would be directed to the CEO, and then you can shoot it over to your staff. I had a chance to look through some a board adopted policy that I got from one of your staff, which was titled Cost Containment Policy. And my question is, are we using that adopted policy now when we have these types of projects come before us?
Yes.
We are?
Yes, and just by way of noting the motivation, because receipts measure our receipts are down because sales tax activity is down, we have a list of projects that are embedded in Measure R, which is going to be a great challenge to deliver. If we overrun the front-end projects, we are, in effect, defunding the subsequent projects.
Exactly.
So, therefore, we are compelled to manage budgets tightly so that we don't have that situation. That was the fundamental rationale behind that policy.
So you feel comfortable saying that the cost overruns that we're seeing now have been cited because of the policy?
I think that there were a number of issues on Expo. I think the Expo 1, the approach that was taken proved not to be working very well. They've changed it on Expo 2. I do know that we've implemented more intense levels of review of the goal line and the Expo Authority, as well as our own projects. We've strengthened our program management oversight function at MTA. So our goal, the reason in the policy for citing particular milestones was to compel us to be open and bring stuff to the board long before it becomes set in concrete.
Well, that was the genesis of the cost containment policy.
Yes, sir.
Because of the other problem.
Let me ask a couple other questions. The contingency funds that we associate with these projects, I think I heard on one of them today that there was 16% of the original life of project. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And I think I've heard on others that it was as much as 20%. Is that correct? Could somebody come who has the answer?
MTA projects, we do have some projects with that kind of contingency. Otherwise, they normally 10 to 15% range.
10 to 15, but not 20.
Yes. Unfortunately, I don't have the Metro policy handy, but basically, at various different stages of the project, they recommend different types of contingency. So earlier in the project, in the planning phase, they would require a higher number of contingency. Our project is going into construction, and at that stage, the recommended amount was 10 to 15%.
So if I understand you correctly, in the beginning, before you do all your engineering work, it could be a higher contingency than
yes, sir.
Past certain milestones.
Yeah, we have two contingencies at the beginning of a project, one for design, one for construction. As the definition of the project gets more developed, then we start reducing the contingency. That's a part of the cost containment policy as well as risk management policy that we are following.
And who comes up with these recommendations for the contingency percentages?
These are pretty much industry standards, and since we get FTA funds, they are very prescriptive on what these percentages should be.
And would you say that our policy with respect to contingency funds that are associated with these projects, would you say they're pretty much in line with FTA, or would you say that they're below, they're above?
No, we are currently following the FTA policies for our risk.
Do you think that you have smart enough people in your staff to actually sharpen the pencils more and make it a more tight contingency than one that's just generally accepted by the industry?
We don't have all that smartness at this point. We are depending some of them on our consultants to do that. That's the reason why the board approved us to hire additional people. As we move on to the final engineering and construction, we'll be coming back to the board to hire some of those kind of people.
You're in the process now of doing recruitment.
Yes, sir.
The positions the board approved a few months ago.
Board approved. We are almost 65% of the positions have been filled.
Okay. So after you get closer to filling these positions, would you feel that we have the intelligence that would help us to sharpen our pencils and get a tighter look at our contingencies than the national average, or no?
As we move into final design and construction, which we are not there yet, we will be coming back to the board for some additional staff that we need to manage this and then exactly do what you are suggesting.
So I'm not asking you to identify in any particular project. Now, in your report, you mentioned a number of them, the Expo 1, Expo 2, Regional Connector in the West Side, and I think also you mentioned the Gold Line. We're not at the final stages of any of those projects yet.
No, sir.
Except for Expo 1, right? And when would you be able to come back to us and tell us, directors, the national average is 16%, but we believe, given the people that we've hired, that we can get it below that percentage?
At the time of adoption of the Life of Project budget, which will be later this year, for each project has a different timeline, so when we come in there at that time, we will be able to say, we have done all this work and this is where we are. We feel this is the right budget for the project.
And of the projects that I mentioned, and if there are others, let me know, which ones do you think would be coming first that you'll come back to us and say, this is the life of project that we were going to adopt, and we're recommending that the contingency fund be, i.e., whatever that is?
According to the current schedule, Crenshaw would be the first project that we go into, and then the regional connector, and then the West Side subway.
So when would that be?
Crenshaw would be later this year in October, and then regional connector will be the end of the year, and subway will be sometime next year.
If you were to set a goal to get below the national, what would that be?
I didn't get the question.
If you were to set a goal,
yes, sir,
reducing the contingency fund,
yes, sir,
below what the national standard is, what would that goal be?
Since we have some of the projects are major underground projects where the There are unknowns. Well, in spite of all the geotechnical work we do, there are still unknowns. So we will still be at the traditional 15% range as the best contingency to manage it.
So you don't expect any change, is what you're saying?
Pardon me?
Then you don't expect any change?
No. We will do our best to come up with the best number we can. But especially when you, as you have been talking about the West Side Subway, we have a lot of unknowns. For example, the tar sands, we've got the fossils there, we've got hydrocarbon gases. So there are too many unknowns to put our arms around and say this is the good number for this project. Yeah. So there will be a...
But you mentioned the first one would be most likely be Crenshaw.
Yes, sir.
And then after that, West Side.
Will be regional connector.
Are there as many unknowns in Crenshaw as you would think for West Side?
I don't think so. Crenshaw is pretty much above ground, and we know the geology, we know the engineering issues associated with that. We can be a lot more certain on Crenshaw than on the underground project.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Wilson, I think there's another aspect to this. One of the things that motivated staff is this. All projects have advocates.
Have what?
Advocates.
Advocates. Mm-hmm.
And all advocates want more and better, human beings being what they are. They want embellishments. And for each project advocate, if that goes into the system cost, that's okay because there's no skin off their nose. So one of the things that motivate us is to ensure that we don't put ourselves behind the eight ball by having a project mostly built but not completed right now on Expo 1, which precedes the policy. So the idea here is my worry about contingency is if I'm a project advocate and I want a richer project, one tactic I might follow is to shrink the contingency, embellish my project with ads, and then later on consume all the contingency. I come back and I say to the MT board, I got a project that's 98% done, but it's not done. I need 2% more money. And at that point, we won't have much choice because we have to finish the project. So this is really a risk management situation here, and the consequences are how we comply and conform to the measure our budgets, which we must do, otherwise we're defunding somebody's project.
Thank you, Mr. CEO. Yeah, I'm aware that there are advocates for each project, and I'm also aware that the people of the County of Los Angeles, when they voted for Measure R, had an expectation that their area was going to get the projects that was outlined in the measure. And so, irrespective of whether we have particular advocates, we as a board are advocates for the entire system.
That's right.
And so, I'm not sure I follow your rationale, or perhaps I didn't hear it clearly. That if you reduce your contingency fund, then you have to go. If a project is 98% complete, you have to go ask for additional dollars. I'm not sure how is that different from having a contingency fund of X number of dollars and knowing that that's there and they're going to do everything they can to use it. I don't understand the difference, so perhaps you could clear that up because I don't quite get that.
Well, could we have this discussion and, or an answer? I mean, we're running out of time here. I've got the green policy.
Well, he owes me a meeting. We can certainly have that discussion there, but if I don't get the answer, I'm coming back here with him.
And Mr. Chairman, I think it all goes back to we're getting this committee gets a lot of information, but then it doesn't get a lot of information as well. The issue of the contingency is not about a dollar amount. It's about a process. And I think that's not what we're hearing. You could change the dollar amount tomorrow, but obviously if there's a national standard, it's because they do things differently in different ways. Come on, differing site. I mean, Chicago can't be that different. You know, all the other places where they're building these things, every single deed, you know, cannot be that dramatically different. So the issue is if there's a standard, then why aren't we within the standard or trying to hit the mark on the standard? So it's a process, not a number, as I see it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think it's a contingency. I think it's the original design.
Well, but again, that should be monitored as well. We wouldn't know what a good design or a good bad design is. What's always amazing to me is when I come back and I look at some of the change orders as what we've done in the past, and you're saying, why didn't the engineer know this when he engineered this? Now, I mean, if there's something different, but sometimes its sizes are incorrect and measurements are incorrect, and you know, and contingencies are supposed to be for contingencies, not for change orders, not as an advocate comes in and said, well, you know, instead of going right, let's go left and then go up a little different and change this. And I mean, so that's why I worry about what's going on, because in the West Side, as we're already hearing for just some of the preliminary stuff, there's going to be some very strong advocates that are very, very powerful, different than probably in other directions. And so consequently, I'm very concerned that all of a sudden those voices are going to be heard here that are going to take a different form, and that's why scope changes bothers me. If it's decided and it's got a price and that's what we're going to pay, and if somebody says, no, I want a portal to now end on this corner instead of the other corner, then they got to come up with the money to pay for it, instead of just making adjustments along the way just to meet the needs of some of these folks. So I don't know where, how, and how we could do it, Mr. Chairman, but it does seem as though we're on the beginnings of a huge construction agenda. Huge. And we have had failings in the past construction agenda, with the exception of the Gold Line to Pasadena and maybe the East Side, as far as being on time and on budget. But it seems like we should have learned a lot from the Red Line, Expo Line 1, and we've got a lot of things to do. So we just seem to be doing the same thing, and I'm nervous about that as we venture in. And the thing is, that's when this whole board is going to say, wait a minute, you can't take more money. There's not enough money in Measure R. That's going to take away from another project, which is why we put that thing in.
Not controlled up front, that, you know, that's the great...
That's the key, is the control up front. Not when it's already the choo-choos down the line, everything's going, the expectation, and then, oh my gosh, we need another $300 million. Well, where is that going to come from? I think that's what we need to know.
Exactly.
One thing for clarification, what we do is when once we see issue a change order or approved by the board, each change is being looked into, whether is this because as a result of our standard drawings not being right, criteria not being right, specifications not being right. So if there are any corrections to be made in those documents, we'll go back and do that. So that way we catch up this lessons learned program.
Okay. All right, any other questions? If not... I'll get to you. Relax. Finished, Marty?
I'm done.
Okay. Thank you. Before we move on to the next item, we have public comment. John Walsh.
Worried about another sinkhole? This gentleman over here was number two under Marty Rubin. He designed the place that blew up, the sinkhole. He is the father of the sinkhole. And you know that, Gloria. And you hired him. And let's say, who was the contractor of
the sinkhole?
It was Peter Kiewit. Peter Kiewit, you know him. Peter Kiewit was the one that Carmageddon. And I'm telling you right now, the story is coming out. The whole schedule for Monday at 5 a.m. was padded. It was a violation of state and federal law on the Carmageddon. You knew you could finish that, and you didn't. And you told the press that you couldn't finish it to 5 a.m. It was padded. And I'm telling you, there's somebody very high up talking to the FBI and your agency about Carmageddon and the false schedule and how the whole thing was around Antonio at 12 o'clock on Sunday to do his big speech. You laughed at me before, and I was right before.
Crooks. Well, FBI was happy we opened it 16 hours early, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Say it to the FBI, not to me.
Okay. I think we're going to jump ahead here. We have the Operations Committee coming up. We have one of our members that has to go to another meeting. We're supposed to have been done by noon. I'd like to hold the Chairman Najarian up as long as I possibly can. And oh, hi. I didn't see you sitting there. So we're going to go to the item 48, I believe, the green policy.
We have 47 also, sir.
Pardon me?
Item 47.
Yeah, item 47 or two.
Yeah. Item 47 is requesting approval to design build contracting delivery for the regional connector project. And it's a 1.9-mile dual-track underground extension of the East Line 7th and Metro. And we are requesting approval to go that as design-build since we are pretty aware of all the engineering issues and also the design that is needed to get this job done. And we feel the design-build approach will deliver this project on time and keep the project in schedule. It will also enable us to use the contractors' creative and innovative ideas into the process. So we request your approval. We'll be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I think you heard the previous discussion that this whole process falls into to that concern as well, too. So
yes, sir.
Hopefully when you come back that there will be a tightening of the wrench. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, the chair would entertain a motion. Is there a second? Removed and second. Any further discussion? Any further questions? I don't think I have any public comment on 47, so ordered. Now to 48.
Item 48 is the green construction policy. This was presented to the previous committee, EMAC committee, and they made some motion. It's in, you have the copies of that motion in front of you. It basically allows us to implement the policy for the metro projects immediately, and then we are going to develop an implementation plan and a timeline for implementing this policy by the cities as well as the COGS and Caltrans. And item number three there also is provide technical assistance program needed to support the local jurisdictions in their effort to implement the green policy. If you have any questions, Chris Levon is here.
As I understand it, I know Director O'Connor, myself, and others had a motion, and I understand that the EMC committee, the mayor submitted a motion through Director Katz, almost identical to ours. So we are comfortable with that.
Yes, and I just want to reiterate.
We won't claim any copyright violations.
No. But when we discuss it, I don't know if there are any speakers.
Okay. We do have a couple of speakers.
Okay.
So.
I'll discuss it afterwards then.
Gerard Wright, followed by Morgan Wynn. Gerard here?
He's coming, Mr. Chairman.
Is Morgan here? Go ahead, Morgan. I'm on it.
Great, thanks. My name is Morgan Wyan, and I'm an attorney with the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and I'm one of the organizations, one of the environmental groups that was involved in the stakeholder process with MTA staff. First, I'd like to thank MTA staff and the board members for all just your continued dedication and commitment to moving this policy forward. We're really excited about the clean air benefits it will bring to our communities. The biggest issue, though, is part of what this memo, the motion was about this morning, is making sure that it's implemented at the city level and with Caltrans quickly and that actually happens. We're concerned that the motion does not have a strict deadline for when the plan will happen and when implementation will take place. So we just wanted to express our concern and hope that the staff remains diligent in moving this process forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Gerard?
Good afternoon, directors. This is our Sierra Club, Angeles Chapter, Transportation Committee. We support the motion. We support the policy for green construction. This is kind of a name sake. You know, why name it green? Make it chartreuse. The name is some other color. It's just, you know, even name it Kermit construction policy because it's green. I don't know. But just Sierra Club addresses its support and just to move forward on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Director O'Connor.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this moving forward, too. But there's been a lot of collaboration that's been going on among the cities, because besides the large city of Los Angeles, there are the 88, 87 other smaller cities that range in size and thus in their capacity to do projects. And sometimes they're just doing a small project. So those public works directors, such one of the areas I represent, the South Bay, they work together and collaboratively, but they need to be part of the dialogue and the technical assistance that goes out. I'd like to point out, too, that the South Bay cities, which are, 16 cities or so, they have a very, very vigorous sustainable cities program, where all of them are doing assessments of their greenhouse gas emissions, and they're doing it together collaboratively. So they are there and concerned and want to make progress in that area. But yet they also have concerns about how, when they have a project, how are they going to be able to comply with this. So the technical assistance in the discussions and collaboration, the phasing, the thresholds of projects, that all needs to be part of the ongoing discussion and collaboration with the end goal of achieving total clean, emission-free construction, implementing it and doing it countywide, every place eventually.
So does that take that as a motion to move it?
Yes, I'll move it forward. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Motion by Director O'Connor, seconded by Director Molina.
Can I have a point of clarification?
Yes.
Does this mean then that the agency, being the MTA, has should then take comments and involve the local jurisdictions, i.e. the smaller cities and the like, in this policy to make sure that it doesn't become a big burden for them to actually comply with it?
Right. It's a combination of how to get the input.
Allowing flexibility,
right,
as well, too.
Working with them, allowing the flexibility again, but the ultimate goal is so that everybody can achieve this. It's just, how do you phase that? You know, what is the capacity? How do you phase that over time? You know, what are those thresholds? So working with the cities, again, with the same end goal, but recognizing the...
Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Without objection, so ordered. You're going to waive your report. Is that correct?
I'll skip it.
Or do you have something brief that you'd like to say? Okay. And I understand Director Miles, it's been pulled.
How are you?
Okay, so public comment before we adjourn the meeting. John Walsh.
John Walsh, flying in Hollywood, Chicago. Let me be perfectly clear about what happened. A bogus contract with padded dates, padded hours, was signed between Peter Kiewit and this agency. All of a sudden, at 11:29 a.m. on Sunday, you were on schedule, and a minute later, you were 17 and a half hours ahead of schedule. As a result, in your contract, that triggered a $300,000 payment. You know, this is cost overruns, Ms. Molina. You should be checking. He gets $300,000 for finishing way ahead of time, two-thirds of the time. In fact, he actually had a lot of problems. There was a second schedule. The mayor was on the phone constantly. I want it finished by noon for a press conference. And he got it. That was a theft. Gift of money of $300,000 and a violation of contract law. See a and you all did it for Antonio. All of you.
Thank you. With there being no further allegations or discussion, meeting is adjourned.